Now, one of the books that Will Grosier gave me last time I was in London was Frank Delaney's novel, Ireland, which has just been published in the United States. In the book, a storyteller spins out the entire extraordinary fable of his people's history, especially impressing a 9-year-old boy named Ronan, who was inspired to find and follow him. Frank Delaney was born in Tipperary, has been a noted broadcaster for the BBC and a judge for the Booker Prize. He now lives in the United States and joins us from New York. So nice to meet you, sir.
And you. Very nice to meet you indeed. This is the thing that a book can do, you know. It brings people together in the most extraordinary way.
Yeah.
And some of my great friendships started because somebody said to me, "Have you read such and such?" And a lifelong friendship was born.
Now, your book opens in the Ireland of 1951, which was a time then when families used to give a storyteller a meal, a drink, or more than a drink, and a bed for the night to gain an evening's entertainment, almost the way families today go out for dinner and a movie. Is that an accurate comparison?
It's a very good comparison. The only difference, of course, is that to have the dinner and movie, you had to relocate your family to a new locus, the local diner, the local movie house, whereas the storyteller came to you, and in the shadows between the firelight and the wall, he made the pictures. Mm-hmm. He projected his pictures on the white stonewashed wall of the farmhouse or the cottage, and people sat around there, and their flickering screen were the flames from the fire while he was sitting there with the shadows playing on his face, and he was conjuring wizards and dragons and saints and mountains and volcanoes and wonderful stories, and the family sat there looking at him, the children's shins getting mottled from the fire, the adults' faces getting reddened, completely entranced.
An unexpected part of the book for me was the detail with which the storyteller spins out even the natural history of Ireland, the birth of Ireland.
Yes.
Dramatic. I think your phrase is a stone born of fire and cooled by the sea.
From as early as I could remember, I walked the fields. And these limestone outcrops, you know, with their badges of moss and lichen and their curious places in the fields, they always fascinated me. And once in a while you'd find a little pool of water there after a shower, or you'd see a bird feeding from the seeds that had landed on top of a stone. And they fascinated me, but I didn't know they fascinated me until I came to write this book. And when I started to think about it, I thought, well, of course, we're walking on bedrock. No matter how deep is the subsoil of my own county, Tipperary, where the wonderful Golden Vale runs across it like a great fertile crescent, no matter how deep we go down, we still strike rock. So that, therefore, any novel must have a bedrock, and I had the perfect metaphor.
Any interview with you, and certainly a book that begins on this premise, raises the eternal question of why is it the Irish, as a generalization, but one which I must say you embody, tend to be loquacious, eloquent, and just better communicators.
We were not permitted any education, so therefore we had to be as subversive as we could. We were already subversive. There's no word in the Irish language, in Gaelic. There's no word for yes, and there's no word for no. I should also point out there's no word for sex, but we're not going down that road this morning. We were already devious, and therefore, when the opportunity came, when the language, the English language, was forced upon us, there seems to have been a kind of natural will that said, right, we will use it better than the English ever could themselves, and we will make it into a weapon.
One of your characters, I believe it's Silken Elder, mm-hmm. says, "This land will drive you away." Which
yes.
is, well, if I could get you to expand on that.
All Irish writers, all writers' great mentor has to be, I think, finally, James Joyce, because he's the one who knew how to redact the human voice towards the ends of literature better than anybody who had ever done so before. And Joyce took with him, as his weapons, he said, silence, exile, and cunning. Home in on exile. Distance lends enchantment to the view, but it also lends objectivity. You can't write in Ireland, Scott, because you're sitting at the bar and somebody says, "What have you been doing today?" "Oh, I was writing a chapter dealing with St. Patrick or dealing with 1916 or whatever." "Oh, tell us." And then by the time you've done it, you've taken the eggs out of the nest and you can't do it anymore. So you need to be away. Plus, it is such an incestuous society, or was when I was growing up, and the tyranny of Catholicism as practiced in Ireland was so great that you could not be allowed a stimulating thought, and it was very, very hard to bring that thought to flower.
in places, I think, like New York and Chicago and Boston, St. Patrick's Day has sort of crossed a divide from being an observance for the Irish-American community to, in a sense, a celebration of the colors of everybody living within mm-hmm. that city. It is often said, as my Irish mother says, oh, darling, he drove the snakes out of Ireland. If I could get you to address that, and I'm rather more interested in Patrick's confrontation with the devil.
If you stand on the Rock of Cashel, to the north of it, you see a mountain with a gap in it. That's called the Devil's Bit. And the rock you're standing on is supposed to fit exactly into that gap in that mountain 20 miles north, because when St. Patrick was chasing the devil out of Ireland, the devil found this mountain in his way, mm-hmm. took a bite out of it, and when he came to rest for a breather at Cashel, he dropped the rock. So it is said that if they removed the church and the castle from the top of the Rock of Cashel, transported the rock back to this mountain, it would close the gap. I grew up with that taught, not as myth, but as fact. That's partly also why the Irish are so loquacious and so imaginative, because things that you and any sane and sensible person would regard as folklore or fiction, no, we were taught that as our pure history.
Could I get you to read a section from your
of course.
Book? Where Patrick confronts the devil in his scaly flesh, I think it's safe to say.
Yes. There's a section on page 109. Patrick has found the devil in a cave near the Devil's Bit. And the cave is briefly protected by two tall, hissing snakes, whom Patrick dispatches very, very swiftly indeed. And now we come to the moment of confrontation. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't abuse the property of others. Well, you know all about that, Sir Patrick, stepping in a little farther until he all but blocked the mouth of the cave. You know who I was. You know the kind of power I had. Yes, said Patrick. You're the angel who fell, the one God threw out. God in his wisdom, I might add. Ah, but I had true power, and that felt like nothing you'll ever know, old man. You have no power of your own. God is my power, said Patrick. But I have power over people's lives. I can make men kill their own children. Why is that useful? Sir Patrick. I can make women drool over such men, and how does that improve the world? I can make children mad. Patrick stood resolute as a statue in marble. Said he, but can you make someone feel the world all around loves them? Can you make them feel the rain is for cooling them, the wind is for drying them, the sun is for warming them? He reached down and plucked a tall blade of grass. Can you make something as infinite, as beautiful, as perfect as this blade of grass? Look at its shape, its edge, its lovely colour, the way it curves. You've never made something as eternally wonderful as this blade of grass. You never could, and you never will. The languid voice spoke again. For all your preaching, old man, you can't say that you were there when it began, but I was, and I'll be in at the end, too, like I was at the beginning. After all, what are you? A tall man with a beard, who can walk fast and tell innocent people stories about a carpenter from a country they never heard of. What use are you?
That extraordinary passage reminds you, the devil is not without his charms.
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely not.
The devil is beguiling.
Actually, although I would never confess this to anybody, and I never want anybody to know this, which is why I'm telling it to you as a great secret on NPR.
Of course.
This story is my own construct of how Patrick drove the devil out of Ireland. But I was trying to show how universal the split in us is, how universal the dark side of our psychology is, and yet trying to recount it in the form of a folk tale. The vernacular tradition captures as much as the most sophisticated modern written literature how man is, and that was the point of that. In the novel, there's a story called The Only Man Who Could Handle Handel.
That was my last. I love that story.
It's about a Dublin working man's claim that his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather helped Handel to write The Messiah, which is complete fiction, completely impossible, as much on the storyteller's part as mine. But it's got a point, which is that in terms of a vernacular culture, almost any form of communication will do. Irish music going across the world is almost the same as the speech of the Irish storytellers. It comes from the people. It really explains what the Irish will be on St. Patrick's Day and why they will be able to tie into their celebrations every other diverse culture in this wonderful invention we call America. Because it really is not about whether you come from Ireland or Puerto Rico or Valparaiso or wherever. It's that you are of your own land, you're of your own blood, bone, rock and cloud. And that's what the vernacular, the native tradition, does. And that's why it universalizes all of us.
Mr. Delaney, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Frank Delaney, his new book is Ireland, a Novel. I read an excerpt from Frank Delaney's wonderful book. You can come to our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.